Hello and welcome to Pride Mix here at Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. June is LGBTQIA plus Pride Month, and during the month of June, our Trail Mix episodes are called Pride Mixes.
Pride Mix is a chance for us to dive deep into queer history and, in some cases, how queer history intersects with the national parks and the National Park Service's role as America's storyteller.
Each year, our Pride Mix episodes feature the stories and work of the queer community in intersection with the national parks. The National Park's mission is to be America's storyteller, and prior to this current federal administration, it had finally begun to include the stories of queer Americans as a part of that storytelling. Please check our previous Pride Mix episodes to hear all about Stonewall National Monument Visitor Center and episodes highlighting the work of queer folks across the spectrums and how they are connected to the preserved spaces of the National Park Service.
Given the current backlash and hatred aimed at the queer community, in particular the trans community, this mission of the NPS to be America's storyteller has become, to say the least, distorted, and to say the most, dangerous. In a time when stories are literally being removed from interpretive signage, when politicians are threatened by the truth, and hatred serves as the legitimate justification, we cannot allow the people in power to erase the narratives of our community members. So we are happy to fill in the gaps so that we all might be better stewards of queer history and better allies to our trans family and community members.
Therefore, our Pride Mix episodes this season feature the stories, history, activism, and advocacy of the trans community, a timeline that will certainly be even further preserved in the storytelling of the National Park Service at some point in the future when we have moved on from this era of hate. But until that day, it is on us to be the historians. It is on us to talk about the history. It is on us to speak up and speak out. And it is on us to prevent further erasure.
Our first Pride Mix episode from the season took the time to define terms like gender, sex, and sexuality, highlighted the early work of trans advocates and activists, and dug into the work in progress of the trans community up through the Stonewall Rebellion of 1969. This was intentional. We've reported on Stonewall many a time in our work in other Pride Mix episodes. And while Stonewall is certainly not the only rebellion and uprising in queer history, it is the event that got the attention and the event that the advocacy groups rallied around to create a bigger movement. The narrative of queer history has placed Stonewall right at the center, not because the actions of the night were bigger or more important, but because it served as an anchor point in the fight for queer equality and liberation. Thus, it's very easy to think of queer history as before Stonewall and after Stonewall. And while again, Stonewall is only one event in the large expansive timeline of events, it is often seen in this timeline as the moment that raised public consciousness of queer people and the injustices that we faced. Therefore, it felt appropriate to use that event as the dividing point of these two episodes.
So now let's continue and let's quickly go back to the 1970s. It was the time of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and coming up on the tail end of the Vietnam War, the U.S. had a fashion culture shift. As with most fashion, it is reflective of the time, values, class, and economic status of any given place and or community. And in America, women wearing more traditionally masculine clothing was the norm. Diane Keaton certainly had something to do with that. Pair this with artists like David Bowie, whose blend of femme and mask aesthetic were reflected through culture, and a shift in gender presentation was visible everywhere.
However, as we know from, say, all of American history, and one could argue all of human history, where there is progress, hate is waiting just around the corner. And this hate pervaded for decades. During the 70s, police brutality targeting black folks forced protest after protest. Students at Kent University were murdered by National Guard troops for protesting, and even a sting operation from a police officer who posed as a romantic interest in trapping a trans person at the National Transsexual Counseling Unit in San Francisco, where he planted drugs to create a drug bust.
And while the LGBT community, who had generally speaking band together to make the Stonewall Uprising a moment to move progress forward for everyone, a divide between the trans community and the gay male community began to form.
Okay, when a specific community is facing like some kind of brutal conflict, it is always an opportunity for, you know, other communities to like step up and fight with them, right? Oftentimes on social media today, when people aren't doing that, people call them out.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful tool we can use to do that.
Yep.
But in what ways today do you see a divide between the gay male community and the trans community?
I feel like it's probably the same divide that's always been there. I feel like, I'll just speak broadly, the trans community is oftentimes conflated with community drag performers. Sometimes those two intersect, and I feel like there is this sort of mark for gay men to support this part of the community through that arm, but that's where full stop it ends. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't this embracing attitude that happens. I mean, I feel like even though we are a coalition under one rainbow flag, I do feel like there are disparate parts to the community in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, and even just thinking about lesbian members of the community, who part of the reason the L comes first is because of all of the work that they did supporting and caring for their gay siblings, friends, partners during the AIDS epidemic. And those two groups feel not at odds, but just there's a division.
Right. We are united under the same flag.
Right.
There are many of us who speak up in gay male space. I'm not in gay male spaces all that often.
No.
And I intentionally don't go there because I'm not interested in going to spaces where we can't include all the queer family members.
Well, because it's exclusionary.
Because it's exclusionary, right.
Which is why you like queer bars as opposed to gay bars.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Queer bars. Here for that all day long, right? I say all that to say that we're about to dive into something that illuminates the place where some of that started. So this moment in the 70s could be considered the start of a divide that we are still feeling the reverberations of today. So let's break it down. We know that there are so many ways to get outside and explore the national parks. And if you are thinking about finally renting an RV this summer to have an adventure of a lifetime, then look no further than Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the United States, making it easy for anyone to rent an RV or camper without owning one.
They have thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, available right in your neighborhood, and you can have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. It's so easy. It's only three simple steps to get started on your adventure.
First, search and choose an RV that fits your trip and group size. Then, book with confidence. Insurance, support, and protection are all included. And finally, hit the road or arrive and relax, whether you're driving, towing, or getting it delivered.
As people who love exploring and love getting into the national parks, we don't own an RV or camper, but sometimes we want that. And that's why Outdoorsy is the perfect solution.
Right now, our listeners can have all service fees removed from their booking in 2026 with code GAYS at outdoorsy.com. That's outdoorsy.com. And use our code GAZE, GAZE, at checkout to remove service fees. And that is outdoorsy.com. Hey, y'all, it's Dusty and Mike with exciting news.
That's right. It's our episode finder. It's all about making finding our episodes even easier.
Want to find more episodes about hikes in Shenandoah? With over 10 episodes across two separate seasons, it would have involved a lot of scrolling and searching.
Now, with our episode finder, you can find all those episodes with a few easy clicks. That way, finding an episode on Yosemite from season one is just as easy as finding an episode on Zion, Yellowstone, and Haleakala, all in separate seasons.
With over 275 episodes in 35 different national parks, our episode finder will add ease when finding out more about hikes in these spaces.
But it's not just about hikes by national park. We've categorized our entire library so you can find hikes by state, hikes by terrain, and hikes by difficulty.
And all of our Trail Mix episodes are there too, so you can easily find our science-based episodes, interviews, and more.
Planning a trip to Colorado and want to hear more about our adventures there? Want to grunt it out on some really tricky trails or learn more about glaciers, grasslands, and mountains?
Just click the link in our show notes or on our Instagram bio, and it pops right up. You can also head directly to our website and look for the episode finder at the top of the navigation bar.
Conquer one hike in one national park, one park at a time, with just a few clicks with our episode finder. Happy trails!
The Vietnam War is happening. People are protesting. The very soft, flowery, fairy-like clothing that we all associate with hippies is in direct opposition to the very hard and rigid look of the U.S. military. During this time, Trans groups, lesbian groups, and gay male groups were often quite aligned with this anti-war movement. When the Vietnam War ended, however, the gay male look and presentation shifted back to a more mask presentation, even almost what they would consider an uber mask presentation. This was the first time we saw the likes of high-cut denim shorts and a flannel shirt with a combat boot.
A look that is still worn today, literally, like, all the time.
Yes. The uber mask look is often associated with a response to the AIDS crisis, which it certainly is, but it has foundations here after the Vietnam War. So the unifying, softer, more femme look is left behind by the majority of gay men, causing the first bit of divide with trans folks. Now, it didn't end there. During this time, the American Psychiatric Association listed homosexuality in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual for Mental Disorders. At this time, this manual made no mention of trans identity. But after years of activism and many gay psychologists coming out of the closet, homosexuality was officially removed from this manual. After this, the gay male community considered themselves liberated, which caused a bigger divide because it removed the common goal between these two communities.
Meanwhile, on the lesbian front, second wave feminism was emerging. Through tumultuous activism work, the lesbian community fought hard to be seen and included by heterosexual women. This led the group of radical lesbians to create the Lavender Zap, where they cut the power to the microphones during the second conference to unite women. They passed out the pamphlets that they had created called The Woman Identified Woman, and forced a discussion about lesbian inclusion in the goals of the conference. Through this work, the feminist movement adopted the lesbian community into their fight. But of course, this came with the lesbian cultural adjustments. The lesbian terms butch and femme were seen as terms that reflected patriarchy, and those who expressed themselves either more mask or more femme were encouraged to present more gender neutral. This eroded personal expression and created a divide among feminists, though it did set the foundations for the F to M community, or female to male community.
And as we stated earlier, progress means what hate is just around the corner. And alas, the hate for trans folks inside of the feminist community created a term that would later be coined a TERF, a trans exclusionary radical feminist. Okay, so who is the most famous TERF that we know?
It's Lady J.K. Rowling.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Joanne. She's the problem.
She sure is.
She's super hateful, and we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about her, but it is important to know that she is not the first trans exclusionary radical feminist. This term has been around for a long, long time. She is walking in the footsteps of many, many hateful people that have come before her. And so this is not new.
Yeah.
But in case you didn't know, maybe look up J.K. Rowling's response to trans folks, because she just keeps doubling down and she just keeps writing manifestos on her website about how much she doesn't know. J.K. has certainly patterned her writing on this off of writing from other people around this time in the late 70s, whose quotes and opinions we will not repeat here for the sake of harm reduction, but note that she's not the first feminist to come forward with views rooted in hatred and ignorance towards trans folks. The data exists now to dismantle all of these arguments these writers have ever made.
Moving into the 80s. In 1980, APA's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders now included gender identity disorder, or GID. Note that this term was introduced in the first rewrite of the manual since removing homosexuality in 1973.
Now hold on, take that note right there. You see that? They removed it in 1973, didn't republish it until 1980, and now suddenly it has
GID
in it.
Mm-hmm. For the first time, this manual included standards of care for people with gender identity disorder, which included several months of psychotherapy and living socially as a member of their desired gender before working with an endocrinologist for hormone therapy and or consultation with a surgeon was permitted. And while this legitimized transsexuality to a degree, insurance companies still would not cover any associated medical care.
Susan Stryker's book, Transgender History, which has served as the main resource for this and our previous Pride Mix episode this season, puts this moment in perfect perspective. Quote, to a certain degree, gay liberation and the success of lesbian and gay civil rights activism had made it politically impossible for responsible medical professionals to continue treating homosexuality as a mental illness. At the same time, the success of feminism in destabilizing conventional means of social control over women's bodies made gender, rather than sexuality, into an even more important social battleground. The intensified interest of medical science in trying to understand, engineer, and fix gender in these years needs to be seen in part as an attempt to stuff the feminist genie back into its bottle. The result for transgender people was a lose-lose situation. All across the political spectrum, from reactionary to progressive and all the points in between, the only options presented to them were to be considered bad, sick, or wrong. Consequently, transgender communities became very inwardly focused by the 1980s. They tended to concentrate more on providing mutual aid and support to their members than on broader social activism, end quote.
In addition, the AIDS crisis affected the trans community in a big way. Between sex work and sharing needles for hormone injection, the trans community, particularly trans women of color who were also economically impacted, experienced the highest infection rate of HIV across the world at the time.
A trans individual who made history at this time was Steve Dane, a high school phys ed teacher who informed his principal that he would be transitioning during the summer break and was asked to be reassigned to teach science, which was approved. When the school year started, the brand new vice principal, who'd been given no prior context to Stephen's situation, found out that Dane was previously the phys ed teacher and had him arrested for disturbing the peace. Dane sued the school district and received a large sum, left teaching to be a chiropractor, and became an outspoken voice for the F2M experience.
Another trans individual whose voice received quite a bit of public recognition was Lou Sullivan. As a child, Lou kept a journal in the 1950s that he continued to keep into his adult life. He detailed early thoughts of being a boy. At age 15, he wrote, quote, I want to look like what I am, but don't know what someone like me looks like. I mean, when people look at me, I want them to think, there's one of those people. That has their own interpretation of happiness. That's what I am, end quote.
In his early 20s, he began presenting as male and wrote many articles and arguments that were published in GPU News, which stands for Gay People's Union. In 1975, he began identifying as female to male transsexual and moved to San Francisco to seek transition through the Stanford University Gender Dysphoria Program. He was an active member of the gay community in San Fran's Castro District, and in 1976, he was unfortunately rejected from the Stanford program on the reason that he identified as a gay man. He continued his life as a writer, as an advocate for F2M trans people. In 1986, he became a founding member of the Gay and Lesbian Historical Society, whom we have talked about before and reported on before. During this time, he established an F2M-only support group, and the newsletter created by the support group became a major resource for the F2M community. By 1979, after gender-affirming care became less centered at universities, he began hormone treatment, shortly followed by top surgery. Before his death in 1991 from an AIDS-related complication, he campaigned for the removal of homosexual orientation as a contraindication for GID in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. This was subsequently removed in 1994.
In the late 1970s and 1980s, many organizations which platformed equality and liberation for trans people were established. There was Fantasia Fair in Provincetown, Massachusetts, led by Ari Kane, a trans mental health educator who also founded the Outreach Institute of Gender Studies. The trans community of Boston created the International Foundation for Gender Education, which also created the most widely distributed magazine on trans issues called Tapestry, as well as the Janus Information Facility in San Juan Capistrano, California, and also the American Educational Gender Informational Services in rural Georgia, run by Dallas Denny. These were many of the tent poles of a community and outreach for the trans community before big bigger organizations formed in the 1990s.
Another individual instrumental in the history of trans folks is philosopher Judith Baker, whose book Gender Trouble, Feminism and the Subversion of Identity, published in 1990, offered the perspective of gender as performance. It was the first time that gender was seen not as something one is, but as something that one does, not only for trans people, but for all people. It offered gender as a pattern of behaviors in response to the world around us, and that it is expressed in movement, wardrobe, spoken language, and physical touch.
And another individual whose experience and work emerged at this time was that of Cheryl Chase, who founded ISNA, the Intersex Society of North America. The goal of this organization was to campaign for the end of pediatric surgery on genitalia for children born with ambiguous sex parts. Cheryl herself had been born intersex and had undergone surgery as an infant to be assigned male at birth, was not told this until later in her life. After a bout of depression and suicide ideation, Cheryl decided that no other child should have to face the same experience, which led her to founding the Intersex Society of North America. And while the advocacy and activism of intersex and trans folks are often different and emerge from different circles, in the early 1990s, there was some overlap.
A significant event in the timeline of trans history was the AIDS crisis, for many reasons, but during this time, the trans community was considered a vulnerable population. Given this unofficial status, AIDS funding organizations directed funds towards trans communities, providing them with much-needed economic and social resources. This included providing support groups, employment, and healthcare to trans communities within funding reach.
It is also worth noting that the divide that persisted between the lesbian, gay, and bi communities and the trans communities during this time. In 1993, trans folks campaigned for the inclusion of the transgendered community as a part of the March on Washington for Lesbian, Gay, and Bisexual Equal Rights. While this was supported on many local levels, the National Committee for this march voted to exclude transgender as a part of the identities represented by this rally. The following year, in 1994, the trans community played much more of a role in the 25th anniversary commemoration of the Stonewall riots, though they were not included in the main parade and were relegated to an alternative parade.
It was also during this time in the early 1990s that the word transgender first emerged as an adjective rather than a noun. This made space for the term transgender to be separated from sexuality. And for the first time, the idea of a transgender man being gay or a transgender woman being bi and any combination within entered the greater consciousness. This also coincided with the inclusion of the T in LGBT, thus anchoring a place right next to the other queer communities in the fight for equality.
Shortly after this, media representation of trans folks grew in prominence, with films like Boys Don't Cry, Soldier's Girl, and Trans America, the narrative of trans folks gained more attention, earned more publication, and received more public reception than ever before. A big act of equality that we must discuss is the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA. This bill, that was originally written in the 1970s and presented by Bella Abzug, though didn't make it out of committee until 1994. This bill outlined that employment discrimination based on sexual orientation would be illegal. During the time when this bill was originally written, the fight for trans equality was less organized. But in 1994, the trans community fought for the inclusion in ENDA. At the time, the Human Rights Campaign, the bill's biggest lobbyist, did not support the inclusion of a bill that included the trans community as they felt it would only pass with only sexual orientation listed. We will defer again to Susan Stryker to detail this moment.
Quote, when Democrats took control of both houses of Congress after the midterm elections in 2006, ENDA was poised for passage for the first time since 1994. In the spring of 07, even the HRC, long a holdout on transgender-inclusive legislative strategy, finally got on board and lobbied in support of a version of ENDA that protected gender identity and expression as well as sexual orientation. All seemed to be going well until September 2007, when the bill's longtime sponsor, the openly gay Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank,
recently deceased,
decided on the basis of an informal poll of his colleagues that a sexual orientation only version of ENDA could pass, but that a trans inclusive version would fail. Rather than wait to gather additional support or conduct more extensive education and lobbying efforts, Frank took it upon himself to split ENDA into two separate bills. One, for sexual orientation and the other for gender identity. The reaction in the LGBT community was swift and unprecedented. More than 300 national, state, and local organizations formed an ad hoc campaign, Unite ENDA, to demand that transgender inclusive language be restored to the bill. LGBT advocates all across the country felt that more than a decade's worth of work to build a more expansive movement had been betrayed at the last minute by the movement's congressional leadership. At the same time, many lesbian and gay people who had never felt entirely comfortable being linked to transgender issues since the mid-1990s, gave voice to long-suppressed anti-transgender attitudes that they'd formerly considered too politically incorrect to express publicly, and supported splitting ENDA into two bills. HRC, which had only recently come to support transgender inclusive language in ENDA, lost what little credibility it had with the transgender community when it made an abrupt about-face and endorsed the sexual orientation-only version of the bill. In the end, the trans-inclusive version of ENDA died in committee, while the sexual orientation version passed the House of Representatives, a Pyrrhic victory, given that President Bush promised to veto any version of ENDA that made it to his desk. End quote.
At the time of Susan Stryker's book's publication in 2008, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act died in the Senate. The bill was reintroduced in 2013 under President Obama with trans-inclusive language, but it was stalled in the House and never passed.
I also want to add here, it wasn't until 2013 that gender identity disorder was removed from the American Psychiatric Manual on Disorders. Since we deeply believe in the rule of threes, we've said it twice, so we'll say it again. Where there is progress, there is hate just around the corner. Let's remember, everybody, laws are created so that people don't act like assholes to other people. Or worse, put other people in danger. We are all just trying to live our lives every day, find happiness where we can, and take care of those around us. This is the same for trans folks. They, just like every other group of people, work every day to live their lives in a way that is true to who they are. Everyone wants to live peacefully and be able to afford healthcare.
And this is where we come in. Being an ally means speaking up for your family members and community members when they are not in the room. It's taking the time to have the difficult conversations with the confused and hateful uncle at the dinner table. It's offering the re-education when it's uncomfortable. It is taking a moment to clock the comment someone made and saying, I'm sorry, those kinds of comments and that kind of language is not okay in this place. This is what allies do. We take the brunt so that our trans family members and community members don't have to. It's literally the least we can do, and it's our mantle to pick up.
And remember that hatred is conditioned. We are taught it, and in America, as well as other places in the world, it is modeled. There is no place for hatred in this world, or this country, or in your own personal community. It does not advance us, it only divides us and harms us. It is our work to interrupt it, dismantle it, and model true inclusion. And we are all more alike than we are different. Once again, the main source of today's episode and our previous Pride Mix episode this season was the book Transgender History by transgender historian, scholar, and professor Susan Stryker.
Looking for more episodes like the one you just heard? Then be sure to check out our episode finder for episodes by park, state, hiking difficulty, and terrain, as well as all of our Trail Mix episodes in one helpful place. Click the link in the show notes of this episode, our Instagram bio, or visit our website to make your listening experience even easier.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created, produced, edited, and hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. That's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram and on our website is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariella Klinger, with Sean Sklios on guitar. Our music producer is Skylar Fortgang.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we were on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as New Jersey.